Cape Talk.
Pippa's Planet.
Today I want to talk about the importance of river systems, particularly within the urban environment. And specifically today we're looking at the Liesberg River, which by virtue of its location in the heart of Cape Town is the oldest urbanized river system in the country. So what is so important about this mere 9 kilometers or so of waterway? How much life does it support? And why does it matter? To help us answer those questions, I'm really delighted to welcome in studio Phil McLean of Friends of the Liesberg River. He's an invasive species specialist and an absolutely passionate advocate for preserving our urban rivers. Phil, Fynbos Phil, as you know, and welcome to the studio. Great to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks very much, Pippa, and welcome to the listeners. Thanks for having me.
So those who live in Newlands, Rondebosch, Obs know about the Liesberg River, but for the sake of those who don't, Phil, it rises above Kirstenbosch Gardens, am I correct?
Sadly, you'd be surprised how many people who live around the Liesberg don't actually know about its existence. That's,
yeah,
that's one of the challenges we have, actually, to spread the word of this urban river. But yes, it rises. The Liesberg proper actually only starts below Kirstenbosch in the Boschenhövel Arboretum, where two streams that come through Kirstenbosch, Window Stream and the Protea Stream join. Where they join,
okay,
it becomes the Liesberg, and it flows down then through the southern suburbs, through the back end of Rondebosch, or the shopping centres that have turned their back on it, unfortunately, right through Rosebank, Mowbray, and then underneath the N2, and then it comes past the River Club golf course, where it then joins the Black River.
At the Two Rivers Urban Park.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. And then on to the sea, obviously, out at Paarden Eiland. I love your comment about the shopping centres turning their back on it. It's one of the things that's always struck me. I live in Rosebank, so I'm very familiar with the river because in my part, it's visible, it's alongside green spaces, it's enjoyed by the community. And it always perplexes me when I go shopping in Rondebosch to see it sort of meandering through the parking lot and not being used. If those shopping centres had turned around and faced themselves onto the river, they could have made so much more of their setting.
That's right. You know, and that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, for all urban rivers, actually, is the design implications around them.
Yeah.
We talk a lot nowadays about water-sensitive urban design, where we try and retain our water and its ecological functionality. But previously, you must understand, obviously, South Africa inherited our water laws from the English and the Dutch, both of whom had too much of the stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of the earlier engineering and design interventions were to get stormwater, particularly out of the city, as fast as possible. Hence the canalization, which is just about the worst thing you can do to a river. And then canalization also robs the river of a lot of its essence, and then you get other design implications like shopping centers and blocks of flats and all sorts of things putting their service entrances and their back ends to the river. And you just imagine if it was in Europe somewhere, you'd have the coffee shops
fronting
onto the river.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk about how much life this river supports, because it does, despite the fact that in parts it looks like nothing more than a swamp of litter, it does support a great deal of animal and plant life, doesn't it?
It does, and I think you had on your show earlier this year the Jeremy from Living Labs,
yes.
Fantastic guys, you know, and he and Jordan have used the Liesberg, particularly in Rosebank, but also in other sections as their teaching ground and the laboratory. But the awesome thing for those who didn't hear that show about what they do is they use a measure of water health based on the organisms that you can find inside it as a proxy for the health. And it's a pretty good one, because even though it was polluted all of last week, if it rained, you might get a good water quality sample, but you wouldn't get any of the bugs because they would have died.
Yeah.
Conversely, if you get them, you know it's been healthy for a long period of time. So it's a really good measure. And that section in Rosebank, even though it's canalized, has readings that are as good and comparable to more pristine sections, even higher up on the same river, and even other rivers, natural rivers.
That's good to know, because as a local resident, the one thing I observe is that I never walk past that river without seeing litter of some form in it. And I know that that is despite the fact that there is a regular cleanup of that section happening. So I was going to ask you, how healthy is it? The answer is it depends which section of the river you're looking at, right?
I guess so. You know, the canalization, as I said, is a really difficult thing for a river to cope with. It makes it far less resilient to deal with the stresses that we put on it as urban society. The other point about rivers in the catchment in a city is that they're all connected via the stormwater system. Rivers form part of what's called the roads and stormwater network. So all rain events wash things, and that can be litter and everything, into stormwater culverts that flush out into the nearest river. So that litter that you see, often people misconstrue it as having been dumped at that spot, but you know, if somebody drops a chip packet outside Forres today and it rains, tomorrow that's in an observatory.
Yeah.
And that linkage is often not very well understood. But the river health, it declines in canalized sections, but it can revive very quickly after canalized sections. In other words, where there are canalized sections and then they become decanalized, the river responds pretty well still.
Let's talk a little bit about the importance of that life there and what kind of life we're talking about, because I know one of the challenges for the Lisbeck is it's not always the right kind of life that's being supported. We'd love to see indigenous plants thriving and indigenous species thriving, but often it's alien invasive species which pose quite a big challenge to the river system, don't they?
Again, it's another legacy of the urbanization and the urban pressures. Worldwide, for some reason, humans like to garden with exotic species. So it's a common thing that wherever you are in the world, wherever the urbanized gardens are, they contain a disproportionately high number of foreign species to that place. And so of that, a subset is going to become invasive. And sure, that is something that we deal with quite a lot on the Lisbeck. And you know, one of the biggest problems I have is something that almost everyone has in their yard. It's kikuyu. And that swamps our beds when we pull up something big like some invasive lantana hedges. We plant indigenous species underneath that, but in no time, one winter, and it's covered in grass again.
Yeah. I'm chatting to Phil McLean about the health of the Lisbeck River, but I want it to be a broader conversation about why we should care about the rivers in the middle of the city. Phil, why is it so important to you that we make use of and engage with and take care of a river running through the heart of the city, other than the fact that nobody wants to look at an ugly, stagnant, smelly, littered piece of water?
Sure. Look, there's two main reasons, and the one is that it's doing a whole lot of stuff for us for free. We call it ecological infrastructure or ecosystem services. That river by its nature is filtering the water that is running through it. It's allowing some of that water to seep into the ground, which is of critical importance now with a major drought response being people sinking boreholes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to actually try and recharge some of that groundwater and that doesn't happen in canalized sections, by the way. So you've got that those ecosystem services that are being done for free and providing us with great benefits. There is also the fact that in the world now, most people in the world live in an urban environment. So, and a lot of them in cities. And so any wildlife, any nature that occurs in the city is, for a lot of people, the only wildlife or nature that they will ever encounter in their lives. So it's fundamentally important that we really take charge and look after that which we have that still functions, and look after it so that future generations and even current generations can enjoy it and appreciate it.
Mm. I love what's happened at the Lisbeck in that the local community has taken it upon itself over a process of several decades, it should be said, to take responsibility for it. Let's talk a little bit about what happened with Friends of the Lisbeck, because it's been going for 25 years now. Started as a group of friends deciding that they wanted to keep their bit of the river clean and getting together to do a litter cleanup. But it's grown and changed substantially since then, hasn't it?
Right. You know, it started with active citizenry, and we continue with that active part. The action part is what we pride ourselves on at the moment, is that we're always doing something. Even today, it's 33 degrees, and my team, hopefully now they're sitting in the shade listening to this, but they're on the river every day, and they're doing something. That's an action program. But the start out was very small. It was a group of people getting together as weekend warriors, just addressing a problem that they saw, which was at that stage the visual impact of litter. And it's sad to say that doesn't go away. We clear something like 3,000 municipal bags worth of trash out of that river every year.
Sure.
And it doesn't stop. But it grew organically. They formulated this friends group under the Wildlife and Environmental Society of South Africa, WESA's Friends of program. And for a long time it ran within the WESA umbrella. And we're still affiliated. And, you know, it grew because it was a thing that people could tangibly do. I think that part about looking after nature that we have in the urban center is very important. You know, we all care about the fact that rhinos are being poached and all sorts of perlimon issues and that. But not a lot of us have the wherewithal to do anything about those things except rail about it on maybe social media. Mm. But the urban situation, we can walk out of our door and touch, and so that which you have control over, you should exercise that control in a positive way. And that is what happened with the friends. They grew and fed on each other and managed to have the kind of support and the ongoing, I guess, personalities in the organization, but also the strength of tenure to carry on. And then obviously in the later years now, some decent funding from some very generous benefactors who enable us to have this team on the ground.
Funding from benefactors, do you receive any funding or support of any kind from the city itself?
Look, the city budgets in on the environmental side is probably one of the lowest rungs that they get, and it's the first sort of thing that gets cut as soon as there's a wobble anywhere. So we don't rely on anything from the city, but yes, we do get a tremendous amount of support. We are connected with, for example, the solid waste guys. I have a run, and they collect our litter that we collect out of the Liesbeck. Obviously, parks, recreation and parks guys are very supportive in what they can do. So they can sometimes provide us with plants or trees. Sometimes they can provide us with manpower for mowing or whatever else we need, or chainsawing big trees that have fallen or something like that. And then also the invasive species unit of the city, which runs the Qatar Asmal Expanded Public Works Program. And we've been working lately with them very closely, and they've provided us a team of, I think it's 20, maybe 30 staff who've done major work that would have taken us months to get through, and they did it in a week. But then they've also provided, amongst other things, this litter boom below the Durban Road interchange that is helping us and them to clear plastic out of the rivers. And remember, it's a big thing at the moment talking about plastic in oceans, but all of that plastic in the oceans comes from rivers.
From rivers,
That's the artery by which they get to the sea. So if you want to stop plastic arriving in the oceans, clean it out of the rivers.
It's such an important point. Every time I've done a beach cleanup, that's been emphasized. Your initial thought as you step onto Milnerton Beach is, oh, where's this been dumped by lazy beachgoers? You can't reach a litter bin. It hasn't been. It's come down through the rivers. So if we could stop it before it reached the beach, part of the problem would disappear. I'm very mindful as we chat that the River Club development has been in the headlines, the proposals to transform that site into a much more densely populated and built upon area. Does Friends of the Liesbeck have a public position on that proposal?
Yes. The proposal as it stands is out of keeping with the ecology of the area. And we've got a lot of problems with the initial reports, ecological reports that came out on that. For example, the environmental consultants missed certain fish species that do occur in that river, and they're indigenous and in one case endemic. They missed critically endangered plant species that have populations, only one population in the greater Cape Town area. So there's some fundamental flaws in that. And then obviously the hydrology report that sort of casually indicated that if that floodplain was raised a meter or so up before the building was put on, it would cease to be in the 1-in-100-year floodline. But, you know, it's not an anti-gravity device. If you fill in that floodplain, and incidentally, that's what rivers are supposed to do. They have a floodplain where the water spills out. If you take that away, if you take that capacity away, that water is still going to go somewhere. And when you've got a river that's already constrained with canals all over the show, you're actually forcing that water to spill out elsewhere and affect other people. So ecologically, we're not happy with it. Hydrologically, we're not happy with it, and the scale, the scope of it in an environmentally sensitive and place where environment is getting knocked down by the day, I think it's inappropriate.
Where are we? I mean, I know it's been backwards and forwards and reviewed and public hearings. Is it a done deal, or is there still a chance for public opposition to that development plan?
I stand on correction there, but I understand that there was a tribunal held that I'm not sure what the outcomes of that were, but I imagine there's still going to be more chance for public participation as the process goes forward.
Okay. Moving back up the river from the River Club site itself, you hit the Two Rivers Urban Park. Beautiful space created there, which I hardly ever see that many people enjoying. Why do you think that is? Or is it just that I've driven by at the wrong time of day? Because to me, it strikes me as such a wonderful place for picnics, for riding bikes, for taking kids to splash around. And I don't see the level of use of that space that I would expect to.
Interestingly, I wonder, and I think it might be to do with the time that you went there, because I was taking one of our guys who's just passed his learner's license. I was using that little back road there towards the Wild Fig to as a little place to help him practice. And the thing we had to avoid the most was people walking their dogs, and
that's great to hear.
And people just enjoying the space. And when we work out there as a team, we often get approached by the people who are chiefly walking dogs, but also just walking around and observing the space. There are a lot of bird watchers. It's a really fantastic spot for birding. In fact, we're really missing one of our academics who's gone up for a post in Kimberley, but he used to Doug Harbottle. He used to take a lot of awesome photographs of all the bird life in that section.
Speaking of the birds, Terence has just SMS'd saying yesterday he noticed an unusual number of flamingos in the Lesbek, and he's wondering if that's a good sign.
Sure. Now, I wonder whether he is talking about the Lesbek or the Black River, because they do, when you go over the N2, the Lesbek you can barely see. It's underneath you, underneath the Lesbek Parkway. And then just a bit further on past the M5 is the Black River.
Yes.
So at that point, they flow parallel to each other, and they're often confused. Look, the sign of life of flamingos in even the Black River, and they have been to the Lesbek, but if it was yesterday, I'm pretty sure he's talking about the Black.
Okay.
But it's an awesome sign. It really is. And it shows what positive impacts have been made by the city. Number one, improving the outflow from the Athlone sewage treatment plant. And number two, the invasive species and Kata Osmal teams removing what was a densely packed water hyacinth problem, and allowing the water to flow to a decent depth now that the birds can enjoy.
Okay. Thanks, Terence. Thank you for that observation. You mentioned the Living Labs program. I heard that their outdoor classroom had actually been dismantled, or I don't know if it was accidentally or deliberately taken apart. Can you tell us what happened?
Sure. So we've been running a kind of informal experiment, I guess, in that Rosebank section that is canalized, where we noticed that some years ago, probably 8 or 9 years ago now, that where rocks piled up when there was a stormwater surge, when the flow rate slowed down a little bit, they would accumulate more soil and more sediment, and then certain plants could start to take root on those patches. And it started forming these little islands. And the islands eventually grew to the size that would start diverting the water. So the water now started to meander, which is a natural feature of a river.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an incredible thing, where the endemic fish came back to that spot. It was full of live frogs and dragonflies and their larvae. It was quite an active patch, and it was quite accessible because it was canalized. It makes a good place to jump in and root about.
Yeah.
And it was, but I guess this is the problem of perception, is that it's possible that a local resident lodged a C3 claim, or with the city or something like that, because they felt that it was too weedy or reedy or something like that. Because you must understand, those plants do collect the litter when the flow comes through. It's helpful to us, because when we do our weekly litter run, we can catch
it. Easy place to go and fetch it all.
But I guess just before we do our litter run, it doesn't look so hot. And if someone had seen it then and complained, I can understand. The city then wanted to remove that sediment out of the river. So in a sense, yes, their classroom was dismantled. But I've had several meetings with residents groups, and I hope that I've got my point across, and we did manage to liaise with the contractors who were removing it to leave some of the bigger islands.
Okay.
So we have some patches still in there, and they'll grow back over time. It's not all is lost.
Okay. Well, there's a thank you here from Mary on the WhatsApp line, simply saying thanks to Fynn Bosvil for the wonderful contribution he makes to our neighborhood. I'm sure many others would second that, Mary. Thank you for taking the time to say it. What I'd like to just say in closing is, or to ask really, is what can other parts of Cape Town learn from what Friends of the Lesbek has done and managed to achieve in the 25 years it's been going?
I think it's 27, by the
27,
way. It started
okay.
in 1991. Mm-hmm. But I think the best message I can say is just do it. Just do something. There was, I think, a 50-50 program that was do one thing. If you just do one thing, you'll be amazed how much that sort of thing can snowball. When you do something and you can see the effect, the positive effect that it has, and you keep doing it and maybe other people join you, these things snowball, and just doing something is better than wishing that you could do more.
Great message to leave us with. Fynn Bosvil, Phil McLean, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a really interesting conversation about the Lesbek, and I hope one with wider ramifications for the rest of the city too.
I hope so too. Thanks very much. And just let me take the mic and say to my team, shout out to you guys.
Yeah, indeed.
Well done for great work, guys. We appreciate you. And my supervisor wants me to say his name on radio twice so that I can prove that I was here. Tekeleli, Klaas, you got your wish, my mate.
Thanks, Phil. And thank you, Tekeleli, and all the rest of the team for the work that you're doing. Thank